CliffCentral.com. Turning up the heat on today's political and current affairs is Mike Apple from ENCA. Mike, how are you doing?
Morning. Good new guys.
Yeah, fantastic. Lovely crisp Skype connections here. This is off to a really good start. Mike, thanks for joining us today. Of course, the Burning Platform brought to you by Nando's each week does put a rather big spotlight onto all the big issues of today. And of course, state capture inquiry, Mike, is the big thing right now. I reckon we should start with that. Like we said in the last hour, we haven't really covered too much because we haven't had a lot of things we can just really grab onto. What's been your take initially with this?
Well, you've got Fakey Mentor, who is well known for her Facebook rants and giving a lot of unnecessary detail about the inside of the Gupta mansion in Sachsenwald, gold-plated mirrors, etc., etc. But, I mean, commissions of inquiry are supposed to be fact-finding missions. So what has come out that we don't know? And that is the fact that even BC Jonas's evidence that he's given is that the Guptas were able to siphon 6 billion rand from state-owned entities, and they wanted his help as finance minister to increase that to 8 billion. That's something we didn't know. Mm. Just wrap your head around that. A single family, 8 billion rand is what they wanted. We heard from the government communications, former CEO of government communications, Thembo Maseko, yesterday, that through the New Age newspaper, they wanted 600 million rand, which was the entire budget of the GCIS on media spend in terms of advertising, that they wanted that 600 million, which is coincidentally also the same amount that they offered Jonas if he was to take the job of finance minister. Those are some of the interesting things that have crept up. And of course, the fact that the Hawks are not showering themselves in glory at all. I suspect they're going to have to announce another commission of inquiry to look into the Hawks.
Mike, I really want to focus for a second on what Thembo Maseko has been saying, because he kind of took the spotlight by, in my opinion, just being this woe unto me character. He went on to explain how the Guptas have threatened him and have bullied him as well. Is this believable? Is this even necessary on such a platform?
Look, I can tell you my experience in dealing with Thembo Maseko. He's my boss, by the way. When I worked in government, he was my boss. I worked in government communications. I know him to be a very straightforward, honorable man. I would, on the face of it, believe what he is saying. There's no reason for him to lie about this sort of stuff. And you see a general trend developing, the way in which the Guptas sort of bulldoze their way through and believe, I mean, summoning government, senior government officials to their mansion. There's a pattern that develops here. They do believe that they're acting with some sense of power when they summon senior government officials to their homes, which is something the Deputy Chief Justice picked up on, saying, geez, normally you would kind of go and see a senior government official at the department. It was not normal to, surely it's not normal to be summoned to a house, but that's what happened.
Exactly. As a private citizen, you can't even really summon a ward councillor to your area if you've got like a leaky pipe or something.
If you can find out who your ward councillor is, that's right. So, I mean, it makes no sense. But of course, he said that these were before the days of the infamous Sachsenwald Shebeen, courtesy of Brian Molefe. So he wasn't really sure. But also something I've picked up on, people get into cars and travel to locations without knowing who the drivers are and who the people are that invited them. That is really something that's strange to me. We have a very trusting society, it seems.
That is crazy. I mean, that's like something out of Narcos. It's like you will get into this car and you will then meet Mr. X or whatever. But just to go back again, like the actual... I got to say, maybe the balls of this. So they weren't content with 6 billion. They really wanted to up the game to 8. So this whole state capture thing, like we were saying in the first hour, you know, when it's this level of crime, this isn't just a kind of like a steal here and there. This was well orchestrated. But like, do you feel like we're really going to understand how deep this all ran if someone like a Fakey Mentor doesn't actually have the facts and the figures?
Yeah, look, we have to remember Fakie Mentor, even if 80% or let's say 50% of what she says is true, it is still incredibly alarming. Okay. And because she is unable to remember certain dates and people and names and identifying the Guptas by their obesity, maybe the difference between them by their obesity, I mean, it's quite ludicrous. But even if, as I say, even if 50% of what she says is correct, we have some serious problems in this country. But that we know.
Yeah.
And this Commission of Inquiry is supposed to unearth what we don't know. And are we, and this is something that I looked at as a journalist in one of the programs I put together, is are we as taxpayers going to get value for money from these commissions of inquiry? This one alone for the first 6 months will cost us 230 million, and it's set to go on for 2 years. So if you extrapolate that, it's 920 million rand. And are we going to indeed then be any closer to the truth?
Well, it's not like the Guptas are sitting on that 6 billion, which they can pay back at any different stage. Now, Mike, you say 2 years. I mean, has there been like a sort of like a fixture list pulled up here, or is it just like a very loose kind of agenda? How are we going to get to 2 years?
So initially it was set down for 6 months. And then I think the Deputy Chief Justice looked at what they have to go over, what they have to comb through. The fact that the longer and the more people who testify, the more people get implicated, and we're talking the highest echelons of government here, the president, current and former. There was a call yesterday by John Steenhuisen, the chief whip of the DA, saying, bring Zuma, bring Ramaphosa, put them in the hot seat, make them testify under oath, because a lot of what happened here, it didn't happen in a vacuum. There were people that had information that were sharing it with the Guptas, Gwede Mantashe, Jesse Duarte, you have all these big names that, and you have the executive ethics code, which, you mean, it looks great on paper, but can anybody actually be taken to task for what was going on? So Justice Zondo, I think, saw what they have to get through, and if they meaningfully want to make sure that there is some outcome from this commission of inquiry. Of course, it's just going to be recommendations, which the president, who could, by all accounts, be himself an implicated party, but we'll see as the evidence comes forward. But then he can look at those recommendations and go, yeah, thanks a lot, but no thanks.
Oh, wow. Okay. But it's kind of damning. Well, it's actually really, I get despondent thinking about this, because there's a lot of people who are complicit with all of this. And if they didn't know about it, then they're particularly bad at their jobs. So it's kind of like a lose-lose here for all the current political people. But like you say, it's, you know, are we going to get bang for the buck? Like, or in your mind, what is the best outcome if we do have a constructive, let's just call it, two-year period?
Look, the only thing that this commission of inquiry is going to achieve is a recommendation that there hopefully be criminal prosecution of a whole range of people, some we know and some we suspect, and it's potentially some we don't suspect or didn't suspect that need to be criminally prosecuted. And the role of the hawks, the accusation being made that they actively undermined the statements by Fakie Mentor, by Thembo Maseko, by Jonas, trying to kill the cases before they could even start. That, to me, is one of the most worrying things that's come up. The fact that you have an elite, and I'm making some serious air quotes here, the elite crime-fighting unit that is actively working, it would appear, with the Guptas and with their political cronies to kill cases before it can get out into the court of public opinion. I mean, that is just worrying on a whole different level.
It's also the very definition of state capture, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
As a South African citizen, I want to trust the process. I want to believe in the process, and I am. But I also have to admit, it is a bit stressful to see what is coming out and to see how all of this is playing out. When, for me, I paused a bit when Fakie Mentor basically said that the hawks had given her a corrupted version of her handwritten statement after she opened a case against our former president, accusing him of a corrupt relationship with the Guptas. Mike, do you think we're just going to see a ripple effect of many other people who just have had a hand in some sort of guilty underwork.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's becoming clearer that this was not, you know, just isolated people being summoned to the Saxon World Mansion. I think there's a lot more to this. But, you know, the media has been digging at this for many years now, and the issue of state capture certainly isn't new. But the role players, I think who the key role players are and how they managed to pull off, well, what we know, a 6 billion rand heist of taxpayer money that they hope to increase to 8 billion. But, I mean, how they managed to pull this off with such sort of immunity from consequence is the scariest thing for me. So who the role players are, how they managed to do it, and a lot of people, the yes men or the yes women within the government who rubber stamped the decisions. Thembo Maseko is one who stood up and said, no, I'm not going to be giving over the 600 million rand budget to you guys. And they told him, you will be dealt with. And what did the Hawks do when he reported this matter to them? They, before he was going to testify at this commission, yesterday he said that he has now been asked for a statement because he's being investigated for a 2005 tender, an IT tender when he was the DG of Public Works. So it's interesting how Faki Mentor was investigated for a trip to China when she was at Transnet. At the cost of Transnet, because she was testifying. You have Thembo Maseko, who's now being investigated for something that happened 13 years ago. I'm not saying don't investigate the guy, but the timing, just look at the timing. That's important.
It seems so petty as well. They're going to try to find whatever dirt they can.
Yeah.
But now,
yeah, that's right.
Is there any chance that we're going to see a Gupta of any state of obesity taking on this inquiry? I mean, I right now, as a South African, we'll take an underweight Gupta. That's how desperate we are to have some sort of justice.
Are we going to see the Guptas appear at the State Commission, at this Commission of Inquiry? You know, I'm willing to put a fiver on it. No, I don't think so. These guys pay legal teams hundreds of millions to make their problems go away or at least speak on their behalf. You haven't been able to get a Gupta in Parliament, which is supposed to be the highest sort of decision-making body and body of accountability in this country for everything from the SABC to Transnet to everything. So are we going to see them at a commission of inquiry, which, yes, has subpoena powers, but so does Parliament? I just don't think so. The legal teams will be there, and they pay these guys top dollar to make this sort of thing go away. And I can promise you, Mike Helens does not come cheap, and they'll get value for money because the guy I think is going to be an absolute pit bull on the stand when he cross-examines some of these people, if the Chief Justice or Deputy Chief Justice rules that you can cross-examine those who have given evidence. And I think Mike Helens is going to destroy somebody like a Faki Mentor, who we've seen hasn't exactly got all the facts straight a lot of the time. So they're just going to use these high-powered legal teams to kind of bulldoze their way through this. But are we going to see a Gupta on our stoop anytime soon? I don't think so.
Yeah, it'd be nice. I don't know. But so key learning here, Guptas do the summoning. They don't get summoned. Okay, I'm just trying to tick off certain points.
Which just shows their power.
Yeah, okay. Now, obviously, Mike, the Guptas and the whole state capture thing, these words go hand in hand. But, of course, there's a Russian element to this whole thing as well, because there were big talks of all this nuclear and that's kind of part of state capture, isn't it? This whole sort of nefarious dealings with the Russians.
So it seems that in some dark room there was a lot of vodka shared, and it was decided that we need a new nuclear deal. And this is basically, it seems, what was at stake for Jacob Zuma. That is why he almost tried to push it through right near the end of his presidency, promising that, you know, nuclear is going to be the solution to everything. And I mean, it's completely unaffordable for South Africa, for the taxpayer, completely unaffordable.
Yeah, sure.
And it seems that Jonas was going to be, Nhlanhla Nene refused to sign off on it. Therefore, he was axed. That is now, it seems that is the way that things unfolded, that Jonas was told, listen, come in, help us with this nuclear deal. And also, as an aside, help us push our revenue from government up to 8 billion. There is no such thing as coincidence that you have key individuals like David Mahlobo, the rhino poaching guy implicated in that Al Jazeera documentary, that you have guys like this that are traveling to Russia on private jets. Nobody really knows what on earth they're doing there. So the nuclear deal was a key component of delivering, and you can imagine from a $1 trillion deal how much was promised to Jacob Zuma and his cronies and the Guptas, who happened to, before this whole nuclear deal even came up, just decided for some odd reason to buy a uranium mine at a time when nobody is buying uranium.
Interesting.
And Mike, look, please pardon me where I'm wrong or if I'm getting overly dramatic here. And I'm not trying to create any conspiracies out there. But what do you make of something like the Justice Zondo asking the legal team to look into Fakie Mentor's safety? You know, like, do you think we're going to see slick, nasty moves like this? Do you think there's some people who are just unhappy about the inquiry, obviously, and will they make some below-the-belt moves?
Yeah, look, it's a difficult one to answer. I heard her mentioning the fact that that's when she actually started crying. She started crying because she fears for her safety. I don't think it's such a stretch of the imagination that there could be underhanded sort of moves that play out here. Remember, the stakes are incredibly high. People should, for all accounts, they should be going to jail for this stuff. So Fakie Mentor a target? She certainly believes so. We've seen interviews with whistleblowers in the past. Thembo Maseko himself, just cast your mind back to Makosi Khoza when she did that interview on Carte Blanche, saying that people would make phone calls to say, you know, we know your daughter goes to this school.
Right.
We're watching you right now. I mean, this is real stuff. There's a serious consequence to blowing the whistle in this country. And I'm actually looking into whether or not we sufficiently protect whistleblowers in this country. It on the face of it, it doesn't appear so. And I don't think it's a stretch of the imagination when the stakes are this high and hopefully people go to prison that some underhanded tactics may be used, yeah.
Well, we saw with the SABC as well. I mean, so yeah, this isn't exactly going to be a shot out of the dark here.
Yeah.
People with a lot at stake, as you say, Mike, will do all kinds of different things. We don't have too much more time with you. We need to get cracking. But Department of Public Works. Now, this is a story that's, again, this is what I find fascinating about this country, is that you can get away with so much because there's always something bigger somewhere else. So we're all eyes on state capture inquiry. But there's all kinds of other things happening around the corner. So Department of Public Works spent almost $500,000 around on Bri areas. What's happening with this story?
Yeah, geez, it doesn't rain, but it pours. We have money to spend and money to waste in this country. The fact that SCOPA, the Standing Committee on Public Accounts, has found that they're spending R500,000 on ministerial sort of Bri areas, that's got to be one hell of a Bri, I tell you. And the fact that I also noticed there that ministers are living in houses that are valued at R9 million. These are people of the people, by the people, for the people. That nonsense. I mean, it is absolutely shocking that in a country with the sort of social ills that we have people that are public representatives that are living in R9 million houses. So all of a sudden, Public Works has woken up to the fact that, oh, there's been a bit of wastage on ministers. Are we getting bang for buck? Certainly not. I mean, as I say, it's going to be one hell of a bra you're having for R500,000.
Well, especially when you've got, again, we go back to certain stories that don't seem to go away because they're just so severe. The whole pit toilet situation. And we've got R500,000 bribe places and R9 million houses for people who are meant to have the people's interests in mind. Like, you are so removed from everyday South Africans if your house is R9 million. You are so removed from everyday South Africans if your house is R4 million, R3 million.
Yeah, I mean, it beggars belief, the sort of money that we throw at public representatives. These are people that are, but look, we're supposed to be championing causes like, as you say, eradicating the bucket system, getting people out of RDP houses. We shouldn't be building more RDP houses. And then we have this sort of extravagance. I mean, it just beggars belief, the sort of money that we waste. I mean, the Auditor General's report says 51.1 billion rand was lost to irregular and fruitless expenditure last year, I think it was. 50 billion rand. I mean, this country could be so much further if we actually spent money on the things we're supposed to and made good on those sort of promises that the government makes on a daily basis.
Wow. And these numbers are sobering. I mean, I know it's first thing in the morning, but you hear numbers like that and you get kind of shaken to your core here. Mike, thanks so much for joining us today on the Burning Platform, brought to you by Nando's. Really nice, concise information around the state capture inquiry. Sia, we're definitely going to get Mike on again soon because we need to keep tabs on this.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Mike.
Much appreciated, guys. Thanks.
Cool. Thanks so much. That was Mike Apple. CliffCentral.com.